First, conservative groups have taken aim at libraries across the country in an effort to remove some books that might expose some children to material that they deem inappropriate or even harmful. Facing tight budgets, some are willing to go so far as to threaten to defund our public libraries. But the library can serve an important role as a cost-free shared public space that provides opportunities for social and civic engagement, as well as learning. And libraries are just one example of the types of social infrastructure that strengthen our communities and reaffirm our interpersonal connections. The quantity and quality of our parks, coffee shops, places of worship, civic centers, and other shared public spaces can have some significant impacts on our quality of life. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. How do you feel about the social gathering spaces in your community? What do you love about your local library, your parks, event spaces, or other public areas? Give them a shout out. How do you use them? And do you wish you had more of them? Anybody want to make the case that they wish they had less? Join us, 1-800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Eric Kleinenberg is the Helen Gould Shepherd Professor in Social Science, a professor of sociology, and the director of the Institute for Public Knowledge at New York University. He's the author of the book Palaces for the People, How Social Infrastructure Can Help Fight Inequality, Polarization, and the Decline of Civic Life. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Let's start with some definitions here. How do you define social infrastructure and where do we see them in our communities?
Yeah, it can be kind of a wonky term, so let's make it simple. When I say social infrastructure, I'm referring to the physical places that shape our interactions. And the argument I make in my book is, you know, when we invest in them, when we design them well, when we build them well, when we maintain them, when we program them, we get all kinds of returns to our collective life. And when we fail to do those things, we become a lot more likely to hunker down, you know, stay home, be on our screens, hang out with people who are pretty much just like us. It makes our collective life a lot less interesting and rich.
The physical places that shape our interactions. What have the virtual places that shape our interactions? What impact has that had on our social infrastructure as you see it, Eric?
Well, you're talking to a father of two teenagers, so I might have a bit of a bias about that these days. You know, it's funny. A few decades ago, there was a social scientist named Bob Putnam who wrote a book called Bowling Alone. It was a very famous book about the decline of communities in America. And his complaint was, you know, Americans used to go out together and go to the big movie theaters and walk in the streets together. And he said, now we just sit in our living rooms and each family watches a TV show. Right now, an entire family watching the same show sounds like a collective utopian fantasy because most of us, we just have every individual on their screen. So I think there's a lot of social stuff that happens on our screens. I'm not a Luddite. You can find me on Twitter today. You know, you can find me on Instagram, all those places. But I don't really see the digital stuff as social infrastructure. It's communications infrastructure, but really what it works best at is helping us to find each other in real life. And here's how you know that that's true. Think back to when the pandemic was starting. Mm-hmm. We were all together on our screens, but we were home and it felt miserable. We missed each other. We missed gathering. We shouldn't take that for granted.
Yeah, the pseudo sense of sociability that you find in a Zoom connection. It's hard not to relate to. And when you talk about the family sitting around to watch a show as a utopian, I think of families that are sitting around with their laptops and headphones all watching whatever it is they want to watch so they don't have to watch what mom's watching.
Or even worse, when it's at the dinner table and you can't have a common conversation because people are sneaking their phones underneath. I mean, again... The screens don't have to be terrible and they can help us find each other. You know, if you live in a rural area, if you live in a small town, it can be hard to get out and find your people. There's some people, you know, who find lifelines to their community that can help them, you know, figure out how to deal with a rare disease or, you know, deal with a stigmatized identity that your parents don't honor and respect. And the internet can be great in those situations. But I think even in those cases, at the end of the day, our relationships are so much more rich and meaningful when we find each other in physical places. And really crucial for me is when we share activities, we do things together. And I also think doing things together is a way that we can start to get at this horrible polarization that's, driven our country apart. I know my understanding is everybody in Wisconsin just gets along perfectly. You don't have this division issue there in Wisconsin, I think, right? But the rest of the country, we're really struggling with this.
Eric Kleinenberg, our guest, director of the Institute for Public Knowledge at New York University. And we want to know what you think about your social infrastructure in your community and how it shapes your life and your family's life at 1-800-642-1234. And Eric, you've made the case before that these kinds of spaces can help reduce polarization and even inequality. How does that work?
Well, let's start with polarization. There's no way we're solving the problems of Wisconsin or of this country on Twitter, where we basically get together and yell at each other. I think that like I said, the best chance we have for dealing with our cultural differences is to do different kinds of things together and begin to build relationships and recognize our common humanity. In the book, I write about the athletic fields as places where a lot of that work happens. I'm one of the many millions of parents in the United States who spend an inordinate amount of time watching their kids play sports. And it means that every Saturday or Sunday, I'm spending time with the same set of people that I don't really have that much to do with in the kind of most parts of my life. Like, we're very different kinds of people. We come from different places. We have different religions and ethnicities and maybe value systems too. But one thing we do share is that we love our kids. And we love to watch them play these games, and we're happy to spend in huge amounts of time doing it every weekend. And so, we start our relationships by talking about what's happening on the soccer field and our boys. And over time, we're able to share a little bit more. It doesn't solve all of our problems. We still sometimes disagree with each other, but we recognize that we're human beings. And these days, unfortunately, that's a start that we need. So I think polarization is a problem where we're not going to get at it by persuading each other on the internet. We're going to start to deal with it by just doing stuff.
Your book, Palaces for the People: How Social Infrastructure Can Help Fight Inequality, Polarization, and the Decline of Civic Life. Eric Kleinenberg, our guest. How does social infrastructure then go towards reducing inequality?
Well, it depends on the kind of social infrastructure you have. In my book, I'm really primarily interested in more accessible, democratic, publicly shared spaces, and I'm less interested in more exclusive social infrastructure. I mean, social infrastructure can be polarizing, and it can add to inequality. Like, if you're in a place where your main social infrastructure is the country club, you're going to get to know people who are just like you, who are from your social class, maybe who share your racial or ethnic identity. And you're probably going to hoard opportunities, and that's going to generate more divisions. But if the main place where you spend time is a library or a schoolyard or a park or a playground, it's possible that you're going to start to build relationships that take you to different places. I'm a sociologist, as you said, and we understand in the social sciences that a lot of our life opportunities, and especially job opportunities, come from our weaker ties, not from our family members and our best friends, but people who we get to know who help us discover something that we didn't know was there for ourselves. And so we have to think about where we connect, with whom we connect, what kind of infrastructure we set up to build those relationships. That's why I've become such a big proponent of places like libraries and parks and playgrounds and athletic fields. They take us into the social worlds that we might not otherwise find.
Libraries, parks, playgrounds, and athletic fields with our guest, NYU sociology and social science professor Eric Kleinenberg. How important are these spaces to your life and your interactions with others, to your understanding of others, to the relationships that you have and how they are built? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. How often do you go to your local library? And what about your community's parks or other public gathering spaces? How important are they to you, and what do they mean to your family? 800-642-1234. Our conversation with Eric Kleinenberg continues, coming up on Central Time. You're with us on Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our conversation with Eric Kleinenberg, a professor of sociology and social science, as well as the director of the Institute for Public Knowledge at New York University. With us today to take a look at the value of our public social infrastructure in our communities. And we're talking about libraries, parks, recreation spaces, athletic fields, and where we meet each other in the physical universe. Join us and tell us about it. Do you wish you had more public spaces where you are? Does anybody want to make the case for defunding these spaces or devaluing them now that you have Facebook or Instagram? 1-800-642-1234 or email us ideas at WPR.org. And Eric, I'd be interested in getting your take on some of the attacks we've seen on public libraries recently and how that could negatively impact some of our social infrastructure. Eric?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, you cut out there.
Oh, yeah. I was just wondering about some of the attacks we've seen on public libraries, the content they contain, and what that means to our broader picture of social infrastructure.
You know, I find this very worrisome. When I wrote my book a few years ago, libraries were a place not only that we shared physically, but a place that I think we shared in terms of our values. They're a neutral space. And one of the pleasures I had doing research for the book is I went to libraries in conservative communities and also more progressive communities and found that people really celebrated their libraries. They liked hanging out in them. They supported them for the most part. And I have to admit that I have been shocked to see such a strong attack on an institution that stands for and represents what's best about an open society and a democratic culture. And I'm very concerned about this, effort to ban books and to banish ideas and in some places to defund the library as a shared institution. So I see this attack as being part of a more sweeping effort to make America less inclusive and less democratic. It feels authoritarian to me and dangerous. And I don't know where it's going to go, but I will admit that I see it as a very dangerous sign in our society right now.
Other than being a self-professed lover of libraries, what role can we play in supporting these social infrastructure places that are open to everybody?
Well, first, I think it's important for us to remind our representatives and also our fellow citizens how important it is to have a place like a library. And I often ask people to imagine that the library did not exist. Imagine there was no such thing as a library, period. And, in every community that's got a library, instead it had an Amazon store or an Apple store in that same space. Imagine what your community would feel like if there was no free place where you could walk in, feel welcome, get access to your cultural heritage without spending a dime, and have someone, a librarian, ask you, how can I help you? And promise to respect your privacy and dignity. Libraries play such an important role in our culture. In the pandemic, they provided Wi-Fi access for people and classes and all kinds of things that they did remotely to support communities throughout the United States. I honestly don't believe that we would be capable of creating the library from scratch if it didn't already exist. I think the idea is so out of sync with the way that we organize society these days. We wouldn't know where the profit incentive was and which businesses would want to support it. And we'd probably say it was unrealistic. But the reality is, we have this extraordinary institution. The American public library system is extraordinary itself. We have, big libraries in places like Madison and Milwaukee, and we have small libraries in rural areas and small towns and suburbs, and we shouldn't take them for granted. We should not take them for granted. So I guess the question is how should we support them, and how should we make sure that they're getting the resources they need to serve us? I think we're asking the wrong questions in too many places. In New York City, where I live, the mayor just said he wanted to cut the library budget by tens of millions of dollars to invest more in police. And for me, that means we become a less decent city and a less attractive place to live.
Eric Kleinenberg, our guest. We go to your questions and comments now about our shared spaces and the importance they have in your life and your family's life and the interactions you have with others in your community at 1-800-642-1234, where Jeff in Superior is standing by. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Well, I'm a good guy to talk to about this because if you want to engage in activities out in the outdoors, we have, kayaking groups. We have running groups here in Duluth Superior. We got rock climbing groups. And one of the things I want to mention, we have three universities here. So sometimes they have speakers that come and you can listen to them give a speech or a talk on a certain topic or a book or something. And then during the intermission, you get to meet people in your community, you know, and visit with them about the topic. I mean, there's so much to do that for families or individuals up here in Duluth Superior that there's really not a bored moment. You can go bowling or watch a movie, and you're always interacting with people up here. Four Starbucks in Duluth. So, I mean, you always meet new people. It's exciting to live in Duluth Superior.
Jeff, I appreciate the call. And you live in New York City, Eric, so much the same. But I think here in Madison, Wisconsin, having the campus in my backyard is something sometimes I can take for granted because some of the public spaces that it offers, not just to the students or faculty, but to the entire community.
I think that's right. And, you know, obviously the University of Wisconsin is an institution that has been under assault in previous administrations in the state, and a lot of people there feel nervous about its future and its standing. Things are better there now than they were a few years ago, but we're seeing big fights over, you know, what we like to call public goods, right? These things that we create that are that come out of taxpayer investments because they're things we build for ourselves and that make our lives better in so many ways. So I think a big question for people who live in an area that has a lot of activities and has good social infrastructure is, are they as welcoming and accessible to everyone as they could be? Are there people who live in Madison who don't feel welcome on the university campus for whatever reason? Are there people in Manhattan who don't feel welcome in the branch library or in the playground? The United States does have a history of having built amazing social infrastructures that have signaled that some people really belong there and others don't. And sometimes we do that without even realizing it. So I think every institution and every community needs to ask, you know, what it's doing to make sure that it's keeping the social infrastructures updated and well-maintained and programmed, but also accessible.
Back to your calls now with our guest, Eric Kleinenberg. Cindy and DePierre's joining us. Good afternoon, Cindy.
Hi. I have two points I'd like to make. One is that the libraries are more than just books. They offer so many things that people are unaware of. And our library, particularly the Long Green Bay area, a lot of kids go there because there's nowhere else for them to go. And it keeps those kids out of trouble. And my second point is that banning books is not a solution. You have a choice. If you don't like the library, you don't have to go. If you don't want to read a particular book, you don't have to read a particular book. You have the right to choose, not the right to tell people what to do. That's all I have.
Cindy, thank you so much for the call and the perspective. And when I think of banned books, I think of the movie Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which just came out, is hugely popular right now. And the fact that I got to read that book as a kid and how eye-opening that was to me and how some folks were upset that that book even existed on the bookshelves. And that it's just a small part of what the library can be for people, Eric.
Look, I think... First of all, I heartily agree with both the points your caller just made. And second, I think, yes, books that feel threatening to some people offer lifelines for others. And I think we need to make sense of that and recognize that. I talked to so many people who told me that as children, the library was a place where they could feel at home, even when the world around them sometimes felt hostile. And many pointed to librarians as being people who really save their lives because they help them learn about themselves without judging them or intimidating them or asking them intrusive questions. They respected them as people. I mean, I can't tell you how meaningful it is for children to get their first library card and to recognize that library card is an acknowledgement of their their presence, their identity, their belonging. And it gives them this kind of feeling of being part of a community that's larger than themselves. Not only they recognize, but they learn that when they take out a book like Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, or like Curious George or Harry Potter, they have to take care of it and return it because there's other kids in the neighborhood who want that book when they're done. And if they don't do it and the other kids don't do it, then they won't be able to get the next Curious George or Harry Potter book. And so we start to learn about what it means to be in a reciprocal relationship in the civic realm with people who are part of our democratic community. And there's not a lot of places that do that the way a library does. So there's just a lot at stake when we start banning books and defunding great public goods and social infrastructures like libraries. And I think it's a moment where all of us who share the values of an open society need to stop taking them for granted and start fighting back.
Eric Kleinenberg, thank you so much for your time and wisdom this afternoon.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Eric Kleinenberg is a professor of sociology and social science and the director of the Institute for Public Knowledge at New York University. He is also the author of the book, Palaces for the People, How Social Infrastructure Can Help Fight Inequality, Polarization, and the Decline of Civic Life. Sorry we didn't get to all the phone calls, but you can still sound off on this topic and certainly something worth revisiting again, ideas@WPR.org. He was with us today to help explore why our shared public spaces like libraries, parks, and civic centers are important to our communities, as was clear.